And I just want to bring to surface the importance of making your food relationship a priority, because you can't become resilient, you can't become gutsy, you can't become empowering to other people, you can't reap the benefits of the garden in your backyard until your inner workings are ready to receive that.
Hey, we're Jan and Erin, the real mother and daughter duo behind the multi-platform brand Trailblazer Co.
We've been on the winding road of entrepreneurship together for over 23 years. We've learned a ton about each other, but more importantly, we've each developed ourselves into the women necessary to carry out our biggest dreams.
In 2020, we launched an international keepsake magazine called Trailblazer, where we tell the stories and share the wisdom and know-how of rural women across North America.
It's been a wild ride, and every day we wake up with grateful hearts to be so immersed in the values and grit of these women. We've been witness to the bold actions, gutsy attitudes, resourcefulness, and the trailblazing traits that modern rural women have.
These characteristics allow them to create wholesome, bold, intentional lives, and we're here to deliver and help you explore these traits and attitudes so that you can develop the trailblazer in you no matter where you live.
So buckle up, we're diving in deep to the values, mindsets, attitudes, and tools of trailblazers to help you cultivate a life at the crossroads of grit and passion.
All right, today's guest is Amy Sodick, and we're just kind of blown away by the depth of conversation that we just had, and it's relatable to any woman out there because we're talking about the relationship that we all have with our bodies and with food. So first, here's a little bit about Amy. So Amy Sodick is a former wildland firefighter, mom of two toddlers, and founder of More with Amy. Sodick is a registered nutritional clinical practitioner and a certified physiotherapy occupational therapy assistant with many years of personal experience in movement mechanics and nutritional study. A free spirit at heart to her core, she has lived in Mexico and Africa for extended periods of time, paid her way through university by wildland fighting in northern Alberta, and took every opportunity she could find to further her education in the science of whole foods by graduating with a diploma in applied nutrition from the Canadian School of Natural Nutrition. So Amy contributed a really incredible article to our spring issue 14 of Trailblazer magazine. And this is a follow-up. We really dive deeper into the topic of what does it look like? What is the relationship as women that we are cultivating or not with our bodies and the food that we consume?
It's easy to look at each other's Instagram feeds and we can see the externals of the lives we're living, the clothes we wear, all the things. But we all, as women and people in general too, have a relationship with our bodies. We have ideas and judgments and critiques and criticisms about what we're eating. Is it good? Is it bad? We label things, we label our bodies. And so Amy just really opened the door to having a deep dive into this discussion. And Erin and I were quite drawn into it because we could relate to a lot of things. And so it was just this really raw, I'm going to say raw conversation about the whole topic. And I want to say to anyone listening, the podcast may contain graphic descriptions about an eating disorder, and this may be upsetting or triggering for some listeners. Listening discretion is advised.
So honestly, listen to it, and whether you consider yourself to have a healthy relationship with food and your body, or whether you know that there's a ton of room for improvement and healing, you're going to get something out of this. I know I personally did from the very get-go. Everything that Amy was saying in my mind, I was like, me too, on a lot of it. I actually had a major breakdown within this episode, and we talked about it after, and I kind of had a vulnerability hangover. I was like, I don't know, should we go with this? Should we publish this? And there's no doubt that we should, because if I'm feeling this through this conversation that is so important to have, and if there's anyone else out there who needed to hear what Amy also said, then yeah, we can all be on our path to healing and just bettering the relationship with our bodies and food. So here it is.
Amy, welcome to the Trailblazer podcast. We're so thrilled to have you here and start this conversation. So just first off, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm just elated to be here.
I think this is going to, this conversation is going to meander to a lot of maybe significant internal touch points inside. So I'm saying to our listeners, hang on and also be open to letting it resonate where it hits you. Because as women, we have a relationship with food.
And our bodies.
That is varied, yeah. As we know.
Yeah.
And we couldn't be more thrilled to have you here to talk about it. So to open up, we just thought it would be really cool if you could read the opening of the article that you had. And let us mention, you're in the spring 2024 Trailblazer magazine. We're thrilled to have you. The spread is wonderful. I love all these garden pictures and all the rest of it. So yeah, let's dive in. Tell us your opening thoughts here.
Okay, so you want me to read then from the magazine?
Let's do it. Yep.
Yeah.
So I was 10. The journal entry reads, "I feel fat today, so I'm not going to eat." And that was just the beginning. I struggled through exhausting years of anorexia, bulimia, orthorexia, varieties of binging and purging, and basically what is now classified as OSFED, other specified eating disorder. Different seasons shifted what the expression of my food relationship looked like, but for over 15 years, it was the furthest thing from healthy. I wish I knew then what I know now of the big question being expressed through all of my disordered eating behavior. I gave away years of my life wondering, am I worthy? Am I worthy of being loved? Am I worthy of having nice things? Am I worthy of having gifts or talents? Am I worthy of joy? As a child, I stored my anxiousness in my gut and it expressed itself as nonstop tummy aches. We store memories in our gut. Our emotional letdowns and trauma are stored in our guts. Our expressions of the world around us and interpretations of how we are being loved since we are little are held in our guts. So it's not even a question anymore about how connected our food is to our physiological processes in our body. We are learning that the environment you eat in will decide how you then process and digest your food.
Yeah, that's a lot. First of all, for the vulnerability to say that out loud, because we look at people in the world around us and everyone looks like they're just doing just fine, you know, and food, I mean, we have to eat to live. So it's such an intricate relationship. So
was that emotional for you reading that? Like, do you still feel that, like those years?
I do. I get actually shaky when I start getting emotional. It's at the heart of everything I do. Like, I literally live and breathe this stuff. And it's only been the last 5 years that I've slowly been opening up about it and trusting myself to open up about it. I do. I have such a heart for just, like, I feel like women who are stuck in this, because I was, you're shackled. You're in shackles. And I want to take those away. I just want to, like, cup everyone up in my hands and just, like, tell them you were beautiful and you were loved. And
Yeah.
Before this interview, like, so Mom and I sat here and we reread your article together. And in my mind, I was like, okay, like, what is the overarching topic that we're talking about? Is it food? Is it,
self-love?
Yeah. Is it the inner critic, or is this body image? And I think it's all of it. And I think the way your article was written is, you so beautifully said it, it's all of these parts, and all of these parts work together or they don't, right? That manifest as what we're feeling about ourselves or feeling worthy. So gosh, there's so much to unpack here.
Yeah. I was just going to say the same thing and use the word unpack, because we're surrounded by media. We're surrounded by social media. Like, there isn't a little girl probably on the planet who's not getting messages of how to think about herself, how to feel about herself and her body and food. And, we've labeled food good food and bad food. And it's just so hard to escape. So tell us how you, the journey.
What's your story? How did you end up here?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just going to comment on what you said about there's not a single little girl. And I think that's a huge piece of every woman's story is we still are that little girl. I think in our food relationship, deep down inside, whatever messages you were told or that you interpreted coming in from your family and your close loved ones, that little girl is still inside of us and how we interact with food. So it just puts into perspective moving forward when you want to realign yourself with food in a different way to go back and unpack.
Okay. So
that right. Going back to unpack, what could that journey look like? What did it look like for you?
So I grew up with three siblings. I grew up in a small town. Well, what I thought was a small town of around 10,000 people in Merritt, BC, British Columbia. And we were a happy-go-lucky family from what I remembered. I was well-loved. I have two amazing parents. I never doubted my place in the family. But I had an intrinsic, a hole inside of me that I don't think anyone could have filled, where I was always self-doubting myself. I lacked confidence. I was always asking, am I good enough? I never felt seen. And I actually grew up feeling very invisible for most of my childhood. So there was always this like self, like seeking, wanting to be heard, wanting to be seen from other people. I was born a natural mover, very like love new experiences. Just I'm always like an adventure seeker at the heart of everything that I do. So my family, actually, when I was going into grade 11, we moved from BC. So that was my home. And we moved to a town I had never been to, Spruce Grove, Alberta, just outside of Edmonton. Yeah. And that was a huge, huge transition for me. I went to a small private school and I just was not fitting in. And so I got it in my head that I couldn't be there anymore. I needed to leave. And so I actually set up for myself to go live with a family in Mexico and be kind of like a nanny. They have 8 kids in total, but there was 6 of them living at home at the time. And I finished my studies. I did correspondence and just took off to Mexico in grade 12 and finished my school year over there and then came back home to graduate with the class to walk across the stage. But that was kind of like my first push. I got bit by the travel bug for sure. And I've just been nomadic ever since. And through that, I've had a lot of time to reflect on my childhood and how that has affected my food relationship. But it was in those years that I was at the peak of my eating disorder as well. So there was a lot going on.
And can you describe your eating disorder then?
Yeah, I was in full-fledged anorexia when I was living in Mexico. I remember, it was all consuming. So I would try not to eat anything all day. But if I did, I would take like a hard boiled egg out of the fridge and eat that in the morning. And that's it. And I'd go the whole day on that. And then I would exercise like crazy. So I'd go outside in the heat in Mexico and go run. And I'd be sweating. And I remember wanting to come home looking different. I was obsessed with I had to be different. And because I never accepted me the way I was. And I did come home and I had lost weight. And my family was actually, my mom was very concerned. But she had noticed before then that there was problems. And I had been in and out of different counselors and stuff. And my mom was seeking help for me and doing the best she could back then. Because it wasn't as well talked about as it is now, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And as you look back now with what you know, what started that path, to anorexia? Like, what triggered it, or can you place that?
Because it sounds like you were in a very nurturing environment, right? Yeah. Like there was no external.
Yeah. I later found out when I was about 15, I found out that there had been things going on in the home that I consciously was not aware of, but my body did know. So when I say in the article that I stored my anxiousness in my gut, those tummy aches that I would have all the time, I thought they were just like dairy intolerances or like there was some actual reason for it. But looking back now, I know that it was anxiety the whole time in my childhood. So my body was picking up signals of what was going on in the environment around me. And I mean, what I know now about nutrition and digestion is that our environment impacts literally how we absorb nutrients. So if your body is in a heightened state of fight and flight all the time, you could be eating all the healthy foods in the world, but you're not going to be absorbing the nutrients from that. And I showed a lot of nutrient deficiencies growing up as a child too. I had a lot of just digestive issues, and I think it was all connected to the anorexia. There's a lot of layers, emotional layers under that, things going on in the family, things that were being said, a lot of comparisons between me and other people. But I think I've also learned through research too that gut health and an imbalance in our gut health and different nutrient deficiencies can trigger an expression of anorexia in people who may have the genetic disposition for it, but not everyone expresses it. And so for me, when I look back at all of my gut health issues throughout my childhood, it was pretty bad. It makes me wonder, I had that disposition, and then my imbalanced gut due to stress and everything just made it go boom.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
What a profound thing to know that. And I'm thinking for anyone listening, if we're stressed, if we're anxious, if our cortisol is, you know, streaming all the time, that we are literally not getting the right nutrition out of the food we're eating, regardless of how healthy. Like, that just kind of blows my mind. You think your body would just extract the nutrients it needs to do that.
And that makes me think of young moms too, or moms with young children. Like, when you're in that season of life with toddlers, and, you know, kudos, hats off to the moms who like can remain centered and calm. That was not me. I was such an anxious mom, and was like every meal that I'm eating and, oh, is he going to cry or is he going to wake up? Like, just anxious all the freaking time. It's like, yeah, that's not doing us a service at all. And that's a tough one to swallow, because it feels like you can't fix that.
You can't fix that. And I think different seasons in our life end up being blessings, because if you go through a season of life where life is just crazy, that's inevitable. We can't escape that. But when you go through that, when you do enter into a little more of a calm, at ease state of life, then you really have to focus on getting that nourishment back into your body.
Yeah. And is that how, like, there's the thing out there, they say disease is dis-ease. So does that potentially trigger maybe things that we're genetically wired for to manifest in our bodies? Or what would be your thoughts on that? Like, because we're creating an environment that's not feeling the wholeness of what a body could feel. So what are some of the ways that
each and every one of us battle that every day. There's this wholeness that our body longs for, but the way that our society is, it makes it feel impossible to reach that. Yeah. Dis-ease. I've actually never heard that expression, but I love it. It's very, mental illness is rampant now, and mental illness is the biggest disease out there. Not the things we normally think of, like cancer and autoimmune and all of that. But
what are your thoughts on, because I know, like, as a society now, how old are you, Amy? Do I mean asking?
Not at all. I'm 36. I had to think about that.
Okay. So I'm almost 43. So like we're not in our 20s anymore. But when I look back, and probably same with you growing up too, Mom, is I think nowadays our society is a lot more aware of how we speak to young women and what we say to them, right? And I think back in our day and back in your day, there wasn't this deeper level of awareness of what we're saying to young women as they're going through those developmental years. Mm-hmm. How much that can impact them into their adulthood. So for you, what are your thoughts on when we're young women, when we're told or complimented or not complimented, because a compliment can also be damaging when it's all based on our physical appearance. What are your thoughts on that? Because I feel like it can be very damaging, because that young woman may then tie her worth to how she looks or her weight or what her body looks like.
Exactly. We all want those comments. We want the compliments, but you just don't know where someone is at in their journey with food and body image. When I was struggling with disordered eating a lot, and I would get a comment like that, like, oh, wow, you're looking good. You've lost weight. And then right away, it's like, oh, well, then I clearly didn't look good before. Right? Like we do that whether we're doing it consciously or not. So I just think we do need to be careful before we make those comments, and maybe definitely take the focus off the physical appearance more. And for the listeners, like, if you want to give a compliment, then focus on a personality trait or a strength, like a strength or something that they're doing well. I mean, we all do it. It's all always natural to say you look beautiful or whatever, like to compliment our friends and family. But you're right. It can be, for me, it pushed me further into my eating disorder. So I would latch on to that compliment, and then I would obsess over that. And I wanted more of that, like more and more.
Do you ever feel stuck in your life, or like you're not completely aligned with your unique strengths and talents? Or maybe you want to do more and be more, but you just don't know how?
We want to change that for you. We're going to help you explore the parts of you that are gutsy and resilient, the parts of you that have been shaped by your life experiences, the parts of you that want to live your life on purpose.
Take the Discover Your Trailblazer Traits quiz today. It only takes 3 minutes. This quiz will show you how your unique combination of traits has helped to define how you see the world and your place in it.
And here's the truth. We all have these traits, but we have them in greater or lesser degrees, which makes us all different. When you are certain about your unique value, then you can really shape the path you walk in your life.
Take the Discover Your Traits quiz today, and we'll help you forge a path that feels like coming home. Visit our website, www.trailblazerco.com/traits-quiz. That's TRAITS-QUIZ. Or find us over on Instagram at trailblazerco and DM us the word traits quiz all together.
Yeah. Okay. I think I feel so sad for the young women, like, who are coming into like their teens and early adulthood now, because you look at these devices that we're all carrying and the incredible emphasis that's put on their physicality that is no doubt tied to their worth, unless they're in an environment or have parents who are cultivating and helping them see their worth and value for who they are as a person. And unfortunately, I think that is why so many young women are growing up lacking and feeling that true, genuine power and worth, no matter what I look like, no matter what I accomplish. Like, I think, do you agree? Cause I just think that this is a epidemic of young women whose self-worth is attached to their physicality. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'd think that because we're more open with how we're speaking to young women, and more people like myself are opening up about their journey, you'd think we'd be ahead, but it's like the speed at which these women are being all consumed by mass overwhelming messages of how they should view themselves, how they should look, body image is way up here. And we're just trying to catch up, but at this rate, I don't know if we can.
I mean, it's right down to probably a lot of teen and tween girls probably could tell you exactly how they can pose on a shot for Instagram or Instagram post to look thinner or whatever it is that they're aiming for, right? Like, I remember back, like, I'm 66, so it goes back a long ways to when I would have been, you know, a teenager and was just like smile, and you did a quirky smile, and that was it. There was no pulling on the clothing, putting one leg in front, turning the like there was none of that. We knew none of that. We're just completely.
Even last night, we were watching before we went to bed some comedy, and it was Amy Schumer, and she was like, "Back in my day, like when I was 12, you would have one photo taken of you the whole year, and you just think about how life is different now, right? For 12, 13-year-olds,
and you had to wait before you saw that photo."
Exactly.
I know.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know. There were
like,
no
we're laughing,
retakes.
But it's really sad.
Yeah, it is. It is really sad.
It's overwhelming. It's too much for our brains to handle. And I was talking with my sister recently, how you can see the next, like the generation under us, their brains are glitching because there's so much coming at them. And there's this lack of being able to communicate to somebody right in front of them. It's the scrolling, like when they speak, there's this glitching and they can't focus on one thing. Patience, the level of patience is on a whole different level.
Yeah. And then it could go to the communication skills. Like, unless I think, and this is just my take on it, a child has been raised in a home where there's good communication skills, where they're able to identify a feeling. I'm feeling sad today. I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. Because I think a lot of young people aren't even able to articulate that. Mm-hmm. They just know.
Which is a skill that
you
can learn.
Yeah, it is a skill. And if they don't have that, then what do they do with all those feelings, right? They stuff it or do things that maybe are not the healthiest.
I was a stuffer as well. I stuffed my feelings in a bottle until it would get to the top and then I would just blow. That was definitely an element that fed the disordered eating too, is because I didn't know how to talk about it. But I did this time right now, like this generation, for educating people on mental health, on eating disorders, which is an addictive mental health disease, which a lot of people don't realize. It's very tricky, but it's very important because we're dealing with, like my mom, her generation of women were not, this was never brought on the table. Like, so for them to teach their daughters and then their daughters below that, it's almost like people in my field need to educate the moms and the grandmas in order to uphold this new generation of women coming up to nurture positive messages. So it's very tricky because I feel like there's about three generations worth of people that need the education and need the inspiring right now.
Yeah. To make a ripple effect and break that cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. And break the cycle. And the cycle usually does involve the lineage, right? Anyone still living. Yeah. It can be part of the solution. I know we're going to talk about some other things in the article, but before we move on to that, what advice would you give to somebody who has a young daughter right now, if you were to encapsulate a few things, a few tools or
to help them nurture their sense of self?
Yeah.
If you can start as early as you can, because I know it's harder if you let years go by and then you kind of want to unravel new learning, but right from little on, don't follow food rules, like break the rules. Talk to your daughter about who she is and who she can be. And like we mentioned earlier, don't compliment her when it relates to just her physical appearance all the time, for sure. I think empowering her to try new things and to be creative in who she is huge for food relationship. I always, with my kids right from little on, I've never asked them, are you full? I use the word satisfied. So are you satisfied? If you're satisfied, okay, I trust you because you know your own body. So you can get up and leave the table. And it's sometimes just those little word changes that for kids and then growing up into being children really go a long way in how they view food. Let your daughter or let your children pick what they want to eat. Let them explore. Those are all really big things for those first foundational years in developing a healthy food relationship with them. But I mean, yeah, back to the daughter, I'm picturing myself as a little girl and I was told that I was loved every day. I had that reassurance, but it still ended in disaster. So never stop telling your children that you love them. I think that's just love them with all you got.
I think that's all great advice. If I was to add anything, I would add also to speak to the men in the family too, for them to be hyper aware of comments too, because that also forms, it can be the beginnings of a unhealthy relationship or view of what that can be into adulthood, of, you know, that pressure or that emphasis on, on how you look.
The father's role in a girl's life growing up with food relationship is huge too. I actually don't know why I'm kind of saying this as I thought of it for the first time, but when I would hear my father say, "You look beautiful today," and then compare that to when I heard my mother compliment me, for some reason, coming from my father, the power in that, in those words, held so much more than coming from my mom. So that's interesting. It was a little more like actually nurturing, hearing those words from my dad instead of from my mom.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah. Before we dive into, I know you're turning, I think what was so fantastic about your article when you first submitted it and we read it and said, wow, we need to publish this, is that, you know, your experience has been with anorexia and, right? So I think a lot of readers or listeners might be like, well, I've never had anorexia, so this doesn't apply to me. But to be honest, like when you were reading the beginning there, all of those thoughts, I'm like, yeah, I've had all those thoughts. And I'm sure you've had all those thoughts.
I could have ticked all the boxes too.
So in your work, working with your clients and the women that you work with, what has been most shocking or surprising to you? Because I'm going to assume that this is way more common than we all think, because I think we can often look around us and see, like, I see a woman who I've known and, well, she's been healthy looking and thin her whole life. I'm lucky for her. She's never had issues, right? I wish that was me and that wasn't me. And so can you just kind of burst that bubble that this is so common, this inner dialogue, and if it's not healed, it can, how much it affects so many of us.
Yeah. Like, does any woman get by unscathed by some of these thoughts and just questions about themselves?
I would say no. I would say everyone has to deal with it on their own terms, in their own way. And maybe some women just come to terms with it easier than other women, for sure. That is part of the essence of More with Amy, is disordered eating is one of the most common diseases out there. Or disordered eating is not the disease. It's a way of life for some people, but yet it's the least talked about because there's an element of shame around it. There's a lot of stereotypes around it. I think, well, just the importance of food relationship is not, it's not expressed. It's not being told to the young ones at an early enough age, but it is so common. And I've had women just break down in appointments with me and talk about this because they've never talked about it before. And I'll be the first person that they've actually admitted what they struggle with, which is crazy because I deal normally with middle-aged women.
Yeah. So why? They've spent their whole lives carrying that burden, right?
And what's normal to them, like if you've been in this for years, you don't realize that it's unhealthy. There's so many different ways of disordered eating. I remember talking to a colleague once. She couldn't sit at her table to eat because as a child, her table was the place where all the fighting would happen or where like bad things would come out. So she never ate at her table anymore. And I just like, that's so, so powerful. And I think there's a lot of things like that in people. There's lots of disordered eating ways where people will just put the food in their mouth to taste it, but then they spit it out. That's actually quite common. And yeah, I struggled with anorexia, but I also struggled with the binge eating. I went completely opposite. And a lot of eating disorders do. You don't just stay in the one eating disorder. It through different seasons of life, it can change what it looks like.
I need to ask this because I look at the last 5-6 years, we've done paleo, keto, intermittent fasting, this program, mm-hmm. that program. Mm-hmm. Is that all part of that whole disordered eating kind of thing? Because you're looking for a solution.
You have to ask yourself, what are you looking for? Like, what is at the root of what you want to accomplish through that? I think different diets or different ways of eating can have a place, but you meet people who are just bouncing from one to the next and it's not sustainable. But what is sustainable is finding a way of eating that is flexible, that can adapt to different seasons of life. But yet there's this core way of eating that works for your body. But our bodies are constantly changing. We're always adapting. I mean, our cells are regenerating. So one way of eating is not going to fit you for the rest of your life. But in order to, you need to develop awareness to get to that point. So I would say no, if you go from paleo 1 year to keto the next, that doesn't right away red flag, oh, you're struggling with disordered eating. But if your ultimate goal is weight loss, and that's why you keep going from all these different ways of eating, then maybe ask yourself, well, why don't you just accept yourself the way you are right now?
It's not going to be solved right
now. Yeah. I'll go into a counseling session with you right now. But yeah, you get together with women and, you know, I'm following this program and that program. And just that makes it hard to kind of keep your intentions and your priorities in a good place. So just, yeah.
And it's hard. You see these women who are bright and look like they're flourishing after they've tried this new way of eating. And you're like, I want that. I want to be like that. But then again, there's a deeper question to be asked. Why do you want that? And why are you not that right now?
I thought that was brilliant how you turned it back to mom with the question, because that's exactly what she does in conversation when you ask the hard question. So I thought that was brilliant. And I would say back to you, mom, is just read these questions that Amy read in the very beginning. Do you feel like, can you say, yeah, I am worthy of being loved? Am I worthy of having nice things? Am I worthy of having gifts or talents? And am I worthy of joy?
Yes. Thanks for
redirecting
that back to me. Pretty self-aware. And, you know, the other side of that too is changing hormones. You know, at 66, my hormones are very different than what I was at you gals' ages. So there's lots of things that come into it. And I think the word you used was acceptance. And sometimes it's hard to accept the changes in our body. You know, I remember when I was a fitness trainer, 17% body fat, toned, ripped, all the stuff, right? And I'm never going to get back to that, you know? So anyways, we'll let that one go. But thank you for redirecting that, Amy. That's great. All worthy questions to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so in your article, you've talked about your journey. Well, we haven't, and I know there's probably, we could dive in a lot more to your story, but we want to come back to the part where you say, so what brought me from kitchen hater to kitchen dweller? And you very beautifully articulated these points that helped you really heal, right? And come to who you are today. So let's dive into those, because the first one that you mentioned is psychology for sure. But my takeaways were not as profound as some may experience. So can you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, I think psychology is an essential aspect of recovering from, well, definitely a full-on eating disorder, but also just forms of disordered eating. I don't think you can fully recover without that psychology aspect because of how interwoven it is to who you were as a little child and that whole aspect. So, but we come from, our society deals with disordered eating and eating disorders with just using psychology alone. And that is now changing, because the more that we learn how our health, all of our body systems, how our guts are connected to our brains, you can't properly heal from an eating disorder with just psychology alone. So I remember going in and out of different psychologists, and some resonated with me and others didn't. I found a lot of people were just trying to fix me. And when you're in the heart of your eating disorder, you don't want to be fixed. You want, someone to kind of get on your level and to hear you, to see you beyond your problem. And that probably goes for a lot of things that people are dealing with mental illness too. But my profound impact came from these other things that I listed, not as much psychology. Yeah. The biggest takeaway from psychology that I had was I had one psychologist who told me to go home and every morning look in the mirror and verbally, audibly say, you are beautiful, you are loved. And that was the biggest thing that began to transform my body image and my food relationship. Yeah.
That makes me uncomfortable to hear. Like when I think of doing that for myself, I, how about you?
Isn't that something when you're alone in your room, can you look at yourself in a mirror and out loud say, Amy, you are beautiful. Like it, and then be aware of how uncomfortable that makes you feel. And that is a big sign of where you're at with everything.
Yeah. Could you? Like you looked at me like I had three heads, but I honestly don't think that you could do that either.
I could do it for my face. I don't know if I could get my whole body and just look at it and appreciate it in the way that it needs to be. But yeah, I'm definitely,
yeah,
that'd be a work in progress.
And you're not alone in that as well. Yeah, I have friends tell me that they never look in the mirror because they just don't want to see what's there. And it's like, oh, what's there is the life you've lived. Right?
Yeah, encoded right there. Yeah.
Okay, the second thing you said was forgiveness. I learned the power of letting go in our body when we forgive either ourselves or someone else.
This is, I think, a huge part, and this connects to psychology for sure, but it's, we don't realize that when we can, we usually don't realize how much forgiving we need to do in our lives. So when you come to the awareness that you're holding on to things, your body holds on to things. So again, this affects your ability to be able to thrive in life. If you have people that have damaged you and you haven't fully forgiven them, your body, your actual physical processes in your body are not free to do what they need to do. So forgiveness is one of the things in someone who really wants to tackle their food relationship or disordered eating, to make a list of people who have hurt you and then to one by one go through and have I forgiven this person? Forgiving is an act of self-love. It affects you more than it affects that other person, and it lets your body let go. And I just see it as this big, like, it's this like beautiful exhale, and your body catches that.
Yeah, I want to add to that, and I think forgiving others can be something. What about ourselves though? If I was to make a list of things that maybe I haven't forgiven, things didn't turn out, and so I'm blaming and all the rest of that.
Shame and guilt.
Yeah, yeah. Personal forgiveness. That's,
yeah.
That would be my list. That's where my list would go. Yeah.
And your body would just, like, I often try to view my body as separate from my mind, even though it's the same, but I'm like, am I caring for this body? Am I forgiving this body? Just like, kind of how you treat your children. Have you treated your own body in that same nurturing way? And most of us can't say that we are doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Case in point, like, and I think until something is showing us where there needs to be attention or work with our bodies, a lot of us can kind of just go through life. Like I can get away with this disconnection, or I don't have time or whatever. Like the last couple of months for me, my back and sciatic, and it's just like, it has scared the shit out of me, because it's like, holy cow. Okay. I'm listening. Like I can't just keep going anymore at such a fast pace. And I need to rework how and get reconnected with all those parts of me together. So I love hearing that from you, that yeah, it's a lot of us do feel that way, right? Like this disconnection. There's mm-hmm. who I am spiritually, there's my mind, my brain, my intellect, and then there's my body. Mm-hmm. But it's actually all tied yeah. together, yeah. right? Yeah. So at first that's daunting, but I think the other side of that is that's freeing in the way that if you're willing to be vulnerable and look deeper into all these levels of ourselves, we can also, I believe, heal those parts of ourselves like that if mm-hmm. we're willing. Yeah. So it's not like this, oh God, I'm in for like 5-10 years now of like exploring and self-awareness and healing and counts like all this, right? I feel we are empowered beings that we're able to just as quickly as we've come into a not so great situation, we can come out of it.
Yeah. It's a gift that keeps on giving. And I think when you just decide, you just have to decide, this is what I want for who I am. This is where I want to be in 5 years. Once you start down that road, like you said, you can't look at it as this exhausting, long journey. It's step by step. But every time you take that little step, that step will give back to you in little ways. And that's what provides momentum and keeps you going.
I just want to say that for anyone listening to the podcast too, like just let that sink in, because it's not one more big task to do on a to-do list. Mm-hmm. It's a moment by moment. Can you be kind and gracious and forgiving to yourself? We try and be the perfect wife, the perfect mother, the perfect business owner. And we're just human. Like things are going to go sideways for all of us.
Yeah.
And can we give ourselves the grace to be okay with that? And
I was just going to say, I feel like whenever either of us are like, and to the listeners out there, we're actually talking to ourselves. So I'll just hold up a mirror.
Let that be known.
But you're speaking for everyone. So
totally, totally. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Your third point was healing my gut. You said, as our emotions are stored in our gut, our hormones are cued from our guts, and our hormones control our desire for food as well as our body image. Therefore, nutrition was foundational in breaking the shackle of this mental illness and its hold on me. Oh my God. Okay. Tell us more.
Uh-huh. I'd say the biggest healing component in my journey was actually learning about food. And this is what I now do with my business, is I actually educate on food truths, like say that to them, food truths. It is so powerful to unravel what we have thought about food our whole lives and to learn the power in food and how it interacts with our whole body. It's mind-boggling. Like it's insane. And that's what helped transform how I view food, because again, connection is at the root of everything. I was able to connect with my food once I knew what it was doing for me. Yeah. And that's a massive gap with a lot of people, is we eat, but we don't even know what's on our plate, right? There's no connection to the food that's on our plate. So going back to the healing my gut, I had mentioned in the beginning that I had massive digestive issues as a child and into adulthood. And as soon as I started learning about, I guess, the deep inner workings of food and certain specific food that can heal that, the gut issues, the digestive issues, and I put those into place, I started seeing the benefit of it. And it was like through pregnancy that, I mean, your bodies are flipped on its head. Everything goes upside down. And that part of that pregnancy process physically healed some of my gut issues, which is super cool as well. But I've noticed that getting my gut health into a state of balance, and I know that it is because I don't have any of the symptoms of before. And it's interesting that my food relationship has never been on a more healthy level since all those gut issues have balanced themselves out. I just believe 100% that it is connected.
Wow. Yeah. Powerful.
Because we know, like, it's not just, it's fueling our physical bodies, but it's fueling so many other centers in our body, right? And functions.
And if we hold on to, like, as women especially, we store, like when you get that butterfly feeling in your stomach, we've our whole lives is like, oh, it's the butterflies. No, it's not just butterflies. That's emotion being stored in your gut. So to untie that knot, that's another expression we use commonly, to untie that knot in your stomach and start asking, well, when did it appear? Why is it there? What is it telling me? When will it go away? Like, to become aware of those feelings in your gut, you'll then realize how connected it is to what you've been thinking. Our second brains literally live in our gut. So what we're feeding ourselves feeds our brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's a big wow.
And once you know that, you can't unknow that. And I mean, we're responsible for ourselves.
Ownership. That's another, taking ownership of who you want to be. And one of the most powerful ways you can do that is through food, because we all eat, like, you can't escape that. So use this massive part of your life to.
There's nothing like the nostalgic smell and feel of turning the pages of a real print publication, collecting and cherishing the stories and wisdom within its pages to draw upon time and time again.
Hey, we're Jen and Aaron, creators and founders of Trailblazer Magazine, and we're all about helping you carve out time for yourself. We encourage getting lost in the world of breathtaking photos and immersive storytelling. Trailblazer Magazine is the perfect companion for those wanting to grow the trailblazer within.
By exploring the stories, wisdom, and know-how of modern rural women, you'll feel inspired, empowered, and connected to the spirit of life beyond the city limits. Visit www.trailblazerco.com to shop all issues. You're definitely wanting to collect them all.
Empower yourself to be the best that you can be.
Yes.
Love.
So good. So good.
Love it. Love it.
Okay. And your fourth point, and we just kind of touched on it, but pregnancy. You said I had to learn to embrace my body for what it can do, for all its curves and bumps, and learn to accept seasons of life and how my body is never stagnant. Mm-hmm. That is a tough one.
Yeah. And this is where I may get emotional, but we'll see. I've never accepted myself. If someone could get inside my head as a child and an adult through university, like, I was a bully to myself every single second of every day. And it wasn't until pregnancy that, like, you just embrace everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're forced to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear ya. Yeah. Well, that's hitting you too.
Hey? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for being so vulnerable, because honestly, Amy, everything that you're saying, I'm like, me too, me too.
And you're not the only one. There's so many messages and voices in our head as women. And it's not what we should be feeding ourselves with. I just wish I had a microphone, like a loud microphone that could reach into everyone's kitchens and just say, like, you are enough. Make the food, eat the food.
Well, and there's such a movement. COVID really brought it to the surface, you know, buying local, buying from your farm. There is a more awareness now about wholesome, healthy, nutritious eating, traditional things. But we're still bombarded with the other things, with making meat in laboratories and all these things. Like, there's still, it's grueling to sometimes to sort it out. And sometimes that's what I find living in the country, living rurally, helpful. Is it not billboards and all the rest of it? We don't have regular TV, so we've not got the commercials and all the rest of it. It protects you a little bit from that bombardment to just, like, eat better without having to, you know, weigh it out. And we still go through fast food sometimes just because it's convenient and time kind of thing. But
and healthy doesn't mean healthy means sustainable. Healthy means personal. Healthy doesn't mean never eating those foods. That's not healthy. Healthy is when you reach a place through food where you feel your best self. So whatever it takes to get there, embrace that.
And understanding, like, what real wellness is, right?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe there's some of us who've never actually ever felt that. So we don't know what it feels like. We know maybe we can feel better than I did last week, or, you know, more energetic or whatever it is. So it's not one and done. That's for sure.
It's not one and done. And that is what I love about what I do too, because I get to give people a taste of what something more can look like. But it's not until we've tasted it that we will then create ownership around it, right? Like, you need to taste it and then you need to want it.
Yes. Yeah. Just kind of get bitten by it and just want more, because it feels good in a good way, not an obsessive or whatever.
It's free. Wow. You're free. Yeah. You're finally free. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I pulled myself together. Because like when you talked about the pregnancy, it's like, because I when I was pregnant with Luca, I've never felt so beautiful and radiant, right? And then it's like, I had a C-section, and I think since having him, it's been the hardest thing to look at my body and say, I love you. Like, I'm not there yet. So that's tough.
And yet, like, me and your mom can look at you and go like, whoa, you glow. Like, you're just a glowing human being.
Because I'm covered in tears.
No.
But for us to believe that ourselves, and that's the hardest thing about body image and food relationship, is no one else can heal you. It has to come from inside somewhere.
Yeah. Because I think for me, like, all my life I've told, oh my God, you're so beautiful. You're so beautiful. But there's been such this emphasis put on who I am and what I look like. So it's like, if I'm overweight, I'm not worth anything. Like, I have this belief. So
yeah,
we'll just take a second.
Sure.
I totally understand that. I've walked a similar path, and with my mother as well. And you begin to attach your self-worth to those comments.
For sure.
And it's hard to kind of break that and find a different path of attaching where your self-worth comes from. That's really hard to do.
Being that we work together, I see so many more facets of who Erin is as a person that are beautiful and worthy of everything. So I definitely probably would have been back when she was little, and when I'm into fitness and I'm, you know, trying to have this perfect body, mm-hmm. obviously there would have been messages mm-hmm. that she would have picked up on. So,
I know, like, yeah. And I, you know, we've talked about, like, there's nothing we don't talk about with each other,
mm-hmm.
but I do see, and this isn't a blame thing. Like, I'm a woman, I'm responsible for my own healing, but sometimes a conversation can open up a deeper level of awareness. And because you and I have been so intrinsically tied through so close all yeah. of our life through so many areas, yeah. like roommates, mother and daughter, business partners, friends, support, like all this. Yeah. It just makes me look at our joint relationship with food and how we each can influence each other mm-hmm. for the good or the bad. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're not doing it right now, but there's a much deeper conversation that we could have, and
yeah.
and how we can help each other yeah. heal.
And support.
Yes. But anyways, totally.
For another day.
I'm trying to be quiet.
Yeah. I don't have the tears around that right now.
I know. I just needed to let it out. Cause like this whole, when we first came on here, I'm like barely holding it together. Yeah. And finally it just needed to get out. So it's out.
It's
so.
All good.
Yeah. Well, this is where it gets raw, right? Because a lot of mothers can't hear this side of their daughter's story, because it right away puts an immense feeling of guilt on them. So it takes the daughter to be vulnerable and to be aware of how the mother-daughter relationship impacted, but then it takes the mom to just listen and to acknowledge and to validate. And I think, so back to the question about mothers, what could you be doing for your daughters, is if you are aiming for a healthy lifestyle and you work out a lot and you try to eat all the right foods, be highly, highly aware of what message you're giving, because just as we come out of the womb and your gut health from the mom is passed on to that baby right away, your food relationship is put on your daughter until she's out of the house and starts making it her own.
When I said that, how did that make you feel?
I think it just resonates as the truth. I don't have anything in me that wants to push that away and not hear it. I know, yeah. I know that's how things get passed on. So yeah.
Cause I think a lot of our story is, cause like a look at how you were raised and like, it was like wholesome food, like nutrient dense. Like there was,
yeah,
I don't think you would have witnessed like with from your mom and dad like any unhealthy behavior. But then I look at us when we had our really lean years, and I mean financially, not in our bodies, yeah. from stress, yeah. and stress and different ways of coping, right? Yeah. So I think like when we're ready, we'll
should we
we'll
call
go back
those
there.
The carb years? Yeah. But you know, well, we reach for different things to comfort ourselves too. So that's a whole other topic.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Daily we are working to bring more awareness and space to find a path that is sustainable and that feels good and is nutritious. That's what we're working on right now. Amen to that.
Okay. Back on topic. Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you said supporting my nervous system as a foundational piece of the puzzle. Instead of projecting my emotions onto my obsession with not eating, I learned to fill the gap with mindfulness, prayer, peace, and diving deep into things that brought me joy. Oh, please tell us more.
How do you summarize joy, right? And the impact that joy can have on our lives? When our nervous systems are just rattled and shook all the time, that impacts everything. So learning ways to bring your body into that place of ease, your mind mm-hmm. into that place of ease, just goes way further than you can even realize. You'll see the ripple effect later on in the years.
Yeah.
So it's just very, very important to find even those little things that make you smile. If watching a sunset, as cliche as that sounds, just like lights you up, then try to find as many sunsets as possible. Learn to stabilize and to calm that nervous system so that the rest of your body can breathe, mm-hmm. so that you're clear to see food for what it is, to see your body for what it is. Our hormones are so connected with our nervous system. So if our nervous system is in that exhausted phase, your hormones are triggered to release at different levels, to not release at all. They're confused, they're wacky. And then it's our hormones that literally put a lens over our eyes for how we interact with our food. And that's why if we're deficient in some nutrients, that then affects our hormones and can be the reason why you don't feel like eating right now, even though you're hungry, or why you look in the mirror and you're like, ugh, like it could stem from a nutrient deficiency. That's what the research is now showing. And it's not always that, but it really can be. And I love that because there's so much that can change and it doesn't have to be what it is.
Wow. Yeah. That's very, again, another profound thing yeah. that you've said. Didn't know that. Yeah. So it takes a lot of work to be present and whole in the world today. I mean, there's just so much.
Amidst yeah, so everything much. And the roles, yeah. right? As women, I just yeah. like, oh my God, I'm just sitting here thinking, okay, I want to make sure when we get to the end of this interview that we're closing it, just saying like, what is our lasting message? And we'll get to it, but just, my God, be easy on yourself. Like give yourself grace. My God. Yeah. 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 Okay. And the last one you said was being creative. You said creativity unleashed a powerful connection that was rooted in ownership and motivation for my body. What does that mean?
I don't think you can truly heal from something without creativity. I think creativity, it sparks something in your brain that is yours and yours only. And when you mm-hmm. put that in the context of food, creativity is a marker of a healthy food relationship. So if you're in the kitchen and you're using spices you've never used before, you're pairing food, combining with things you've never tried before, you're being creative, you're putting a plate down in front of you and making that plate look beautiful, it triggers signals in your brain that you want this food, that you love this food will do good things for your body. So I just, like, creativity is just such a rooted issue in expressing who you are through food. And this is what I mean from kitchen hater to kitchen dweller, is you should see me in the kitchen. Like, I'm just like, things are flying and in the bowl. And my husband, oh my goodness. Like, I've made things before because I don't follow a recipe very often. And lately it's thumbs up, which is awesome. But I have made things where he's like, don't ever make this again. Creativity is essential for health, for healing, for ownership, taking ownership of what you're putting in your body.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I've never heard that connection.
No.
That's really interesting. I have to let that sink in.
And I just want to say, Amy, just sitting here watching you and watching your body movements and your body language and your words, like, you really are the epitome
of joy. Now,
this is bringing me, but you really are, like, I'm it's fascinating because everything you're saying feels like the truth. It feels believable, but you're a living, walking, breathing example of it. And I just wanted to note that, acknowledge that, support that in you. You just, like, it's like you could understand a woman's journey and really help her. And I just, so wonderful to have met someone like you who is doing that work out in the world. It is just so needed. We just need to end this battle within, right? That so many of us are struggling with. And I just want to say, like, you're just a picture of joy, creativity, all the rest of it. I'm thinking, invite me over. I'll drive up to Peace River.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because I had the exact same thought, Mom, when you, I can see you when you were saying, like, how do we describe joy? I was like, in my head, like, these pictures of you in your article, because you've got this wisdom, but you just epitomize joy. I completely agree. I'm so glad you said that. So,
well, thank you. I live from my heart. The way I work my way around this world is through feeling. I literally, if this is going to sound odd, I visualize feeling, and I'm such a highly sensitive, very highly intuitive human being. And I'm very quirky. I'm super clumsy. And when I speak, I just speak from this emotion that is, like, overflowing in my heart. And then I often am like, oh no, I was a little over the top there, or I was a little too quirky. So it's really encouraging to hear that you see joy from that. So, and humbling. Thank you.
You're never too much.
In spades. Yeah. In spades. Yeah. See it in spades. Yeah.
And I just wanted to acknowledge, I, like, when you're talking about the pregnancy point, obviously it triggered me. And I just want to make sure that I felt like I made that all about me. And I was there, but I'm sorry if I did that. Was there anything else you wanted to add about that topic? Because I had to go away, right? And do my cry.
No, you know what, you guys? I love that you kind of turned inward there for a little bit and you started asking each other, how did that make you feel? And you talked about your relationship. Like, that fills my cup. You didn't make it all about you. I loved hearing that. I think there's a lot of women who pregnancy does that positive thing for them, but there's a lot of women who actually eating disorders can begin in pregnancy. And that is a rough, rough road. Another part of which we won't get to, but I was struggling with orthorexia during my first pregnancy. I was right in the middle of nutrition school, and there was a short period of time where I became obsessed the other way about eating healthy, to the point where I wasn't even giving my baby and I the proper nutrients that we needed, because I was so obsessed with healthy eating. And that's a whole other disease disorder too. No, I love that you took pregnancy and you spoke from the heart, from your perspective.
I just think, like, that this is part, like, it sounds so cliche, but it really is part of the human experience. And I think as women, when, like, I look back in, like, my 20s and 30s, I was
maybe not as comfortable as being vulnerable, but it's like, as soon as I hit my 40s, I'm like, I have nothing to lose. I have absolutely nothing to lose. And so through this podcast, I feel the more vulnerable you are and I am and you are and our guests, like that is how we can collectively heal each other and feel supported, even if we are living remote or in the city. I just feel like this is part of the real love and genuineness of life. And so for that, I'm never afraid to be vulnerable.
Yeah. What you guys are created or have created and what you're facilitating is just like, it's going to go down in history. And I think it ties in with, I don't know if we're here yet, but kind of the overarching theme when it comes to my perspective on food relationship and moving forward from that is the word belonging. I think you guys have fostered this place of belonging for every woman that comes into interaction with you to be her authentic self. And it feels so good. And I think when we find that place of belonging is when we find ourselves being our best selves. It's when we're thriving in life, when you feel like you belong. I think everyone can think back to different situations where you just have felt belonged, you felt loved, you felt accepted.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And belonging, I think, provides us just a safe place to know that we're enough, no matter how much healing we have left or how, if we've made it, like, it doesn't matter, just that we're enough as we are. And especially as women, what a gift for any of us to feel that. So,
And for all the different reasons that we wanted to shine the spotlight and give a platform to rural women, urban gals are going through the same things.
Absolutely.
And so, I think the more honest conversations like this that can be shared, where we're all willing to be vulnerable and not hide behind facades and all the rest of it. I mean, I'm never going to come on with a house coat on, but, you know, I am going to put some mascara on, but, you know, I knew in my gut, there's the word gut. I knew this was going to be a great conversation today because it is, it's not visible work. We can see the woman who's out there feeding the cows, you know, gathering the eggs, like that's all physical things. We can take pictures of that, but we don't have access to
the inner dialogue.
Yes. You know, Erin and I talk about a lot of things, as she said, but we're not afraid. We're not afraid to share our vulnerabilities because we really understand that it needs to be discussed. And we don't ever claim to be perfect in anything that we're doing. We're just kind of fumbling our way through it. But I really like, you know, and this is interesting too. Anyone who's going to watch this on YouTube is going to see this conversation. But when these podcasts are being recorded, it feels very intimate. So I would say it's really easy, you know, to dive around and follow these threads of conversation. And I hope that for those watching and or listening to the podcast, that it connects you, because I know you use that word too. Connects you to your own self and to be able to do the awareness and reflection that can, you know, we're all about empowering women and to become a version of yourself that is able to bring your dreams to life, you know,
and as defined by you.
And that's the foundation of the whole Trailblazer community and movement that we're building. So anyways, we need to find out how we can.
Well, but first, I feel like we need, like, I feel like this is an egg conversation and we've cracked it open. And I feel like we need to now cover it with the warm blanket. So how can we, what would be your closing remarks, advice, thoughts, perspective on, you know, anyone who's listening that, I don't know, how would you want to wrap this up in a gentle, like, wholehearted way?
Well, I'm hoping listeners after listening to this will be like, whoa, like I now have a lot to think about, or wow, like start being very introspective about their food relationship and be like, oh, I never thought of it that way, which will then spiral into a whole new journey for them, which hopefully is positive. But I think, like I mentioned in the article, so many of us break a nail or we kind of realize that, oh, there's a little bit of an issue here. Something's off, but it's not a priority. Mm-hmm. So we just bury it. And I just want to bring to surface the importance of making your food relationship a priority, because you can't become resilient. You can't become gutsy. You can't become empowering to other people. You can't reap the benefits of the garden in your backyard until your inner workings are ready to receive that. And if your food relationship is the emotional eater, the binge and purger, the food restrictor, the diet bouncing person, the put it in your mouth and spit it out, whatever your food relationship looks like, if it doesn't become peaceful, because usually when you're in those states, you're not peaceful, mm-hmm. you won't be able to have the impact that you could have, I guess, until that is balanced. Just prioritize food relationship. It's not something little. It is actually very huge, a very big deal. It's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say to the woman listening, be brave, mm-hmm. you know, because it can be complicated if you're cooking food for your family and you got to trying to send nutritious snacks and lunches for your kids to school. And then here you are at home denying or whatever your eating pattern is at home. Like, mm-hmm. just take a breath and know that with your own awareness and looking at it and maybe connecting with someone like yourself or looking at the information that you offer, that there is a path forward that will feel sane and mm-hmm. okay. And it's not built in a day. It's just the mindfulness around it, right? So that's the word that I would hold to after listening to this conversation, is the mindfulness of it. What's underneath the actions that you're taking or not taking, and does it need to change? And
Okay. Yeah. Amy, what are all the ways that you work with your clients? Like, is it online, in person? Tell us all the ways.
Awesome. So I do work nationally. I work online and in person. I love bringing workshops and communities to my little community up here in Peace River, but I can work with anybody. So I'm on the socials. So I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram right now, and a website is in process. You can contact me through either of those portals. And then I do initial consultations. I have food packages, more to food packages that are really centered on an individualistic approach for the person, that with tons of, I'm all about education. The education needs to come before the inspiration. So I offer a meal prep program, and that's a whole other topic, is how meal prepping actually ties into food relationship. And then if I can just put a little sneak, I'm launching something in the fall that may be one of its kind. I've actually paired up and collaborated with a psychologist. His name is Dr. Daniel Peluso.
Okay.
And we've put together a disordered eating support program. It's online. It'll be 3 months. And you work with me for the first month and a half, and you do everything from a nutritional lens. And then you actually do the psychology part of it. So you're getting both the nutritional and the psychology in one nice little neat package. And it's very unique. So that's coming out in the fall. And that'll be the essence of more.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. And so, and you work with, what is your average client look like? Like, what are they? Is it someone looking to get more healthy, who have, like, is it for people, women who have eating disorders, or women who are just wanting to get healthier and better their relationship with food?
Yeah, really good question. So I have quite an array of clients. I definitely, someone who is in a full-fledged eating disorder that is in that stage of denial, that is out of my area of expertise. I work with women who realize they may have disordered eating patterns, irregular food behavior, and they recognize it and they don't want it anymore. So they come to me and they're bored with food. They have like food is just a gray color in front of them, and they want that color put back on their plate. So I do that with them. I also, being a holistic nutritional practitioner, I deal with chronic disease. I deal with autoimmune. I deal with getting kids to poop. I deal with all of it. So it's pretty fun because I never have the same health issue that I'm dealing with at one time.
So. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Wow. Amazing. And what is your Instagram handle?
It's More with Amy Sodek is my Instagram. So More with Amy, AMY, and Sodek is SODEK.
All right.
Perfect.
Well, we'll have it all in the show notes. Too, exactly. All the contact information.
And links and all that. So Amy, you're a gem. You're an absolute gem. It was such a pleasure talking with you, but just you bring a level of depth and openness that I just, you,
it's refreshing.
It totally is. And you helped foster like what I feel was such a giving conversation.
Refreshing. You just joyful, creative, refreshing. So
thank you. I'm humbled to be here. Really.
Thank you for your contribution to our spring issue. Yes. And I want to say to the listeners, if you have not picked up your issue 14 copy yet, head to our website, or if you go to Amy's profile on Instagram, purchase the link through her, and her article will just touch you. And once you see her photos too, you're honestly missing out. So
totally.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I thank you. Thanks for having me. I feel so blessed to be part of this. As I go through the magazine, I'm like, what incredible way makers there are here, and I get to be with them.
You're one of them. Yeah.
We feel the same way. We feel pretty lucky. Pretty
every day it's
too.
Like pinch me, we get to do this.
Okay
thank you.
Wasn't that such a great conversation? If you're like us and love learning through the power of storytelling, head on over to our website www.trailblazerco.com for loads of valuable stories and ideas just like from today's episode.
And while you're at it, be sure to subscribe to our weekly newsletter and have Trailblazer insights from yours truly, recipes, DIYs, and more delivered straight to your inbox every week. Catch you next time, Trailblazers.